meeting to order. Today is Monday, February 8th, 2021. This is the business session of the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors meeting, and it is 6:02 p.m. Can we get roll call, please?
Director Beckendorf?
Here.
Director Furmfeller?
Here.
Director Gutenberg?
Here.
Director Hines?
Present.
Director Carter?
Here.
And I'll make note that Director Furmfeller is here via Zoom. Would you please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
I'd just like to point out that the executive session for personnel matters is for the superintendent evaluation.
Okay.
Normally we specify that there.
Oh, right.
Forgot to do that.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Furmfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Carter?
Aye.
Okay. Can I get a motion to approve the minutes from the board meeting of January 25th, 2021?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion?
Why was 6.3 highlighted?
Oh, my apologies. It was just a way I keep track of things.
Okay.
Okay, anything else? Good? Okay. Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Furmfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Carter?
Aye.
Okay, moving on to communications, we have Brett McClendon here for EHS principal update.
So, Douglas has asked me to come and kind of continuation with where we are as it relates to the Homegrown Talent Initiative. And so what we did was kind of lay out, you know, there's a lot of moving parts, but where, you know, what will be in place come certain dates, and what do we hope will be in place come certain dates. And so one of the things that, or one of the handouts I believe you received, is that right, Kristen? Kind of has a, it's called the Academy and Pathway Near-Term Plan, and it outlines where we hope to be, you know, next fall in the top, and then over to the right a year from now, basically, and then on the bottom it kind of outlines, you know, 2022, that next school year. So really the most concrete elements that are going to be in place when we get to next August, we're going to have a freshman exploration class, and when I say exploration, that's interest inventories, career inventories, helping kids find, you know, their passions, where what they might want to do, start doing some of that evaluation and research. One of the things that we've got already in place, and our counselors have been using it periodically with students when they can get into homerooms, is a program called Major Clarity. We already have that. We've been using it for the last couple of years with some of our kids. So fortunately or not, I don't know, since we have some of the HTI funds, we're already paying for it. So we're going to expand the use of that. Use it with all of our freshmen. All of our freshmen already take a study hall. So we're going to use study hall time to incorporate this exploration piece into that that block of time that they're already using. And then, of course, introduce them to the academies and pathways that they will be able to really begin to get into as sophomores. So that's next year's freshman class. Basically, sophomores, juniors, and seniors, it's pretty much the same kind of thing. We will be, we brought to you several courses for next school year, which you've given conditional approval to. Those that get final approval will have, our students who are going to be sophomores, juniors, and seniors will have opportunity to enroll in those. It will give us a chance to kind of do some figuring out what works. We've talked about the academies and pathways. Those are very much works in progress. And I can tell you from right now, they will never be set. So I will never come to you and say on July 1st of 2023, they're done. Because they won't be. This is something that's continuing to change and evolve. And the needs of our students will as well. So we'll always be upgrading, changing, modifying, making them fit. But next year is going to be very experimental as far as the number of courses that we're putting in that are going to fit in these pathways for certification, for dual credit classes, as we make modifications to what our students need and give them more opportunities and find out where everything does fit in a pathway. So there's going to be a lot of change, but there will be some constants. And so what we have then is the next year, looking at different things that would be in place. So in August of 2022, the freshman exploration will actually be down at the middle school only. Next year it'll be middle school and high school, and then those kids that are sophomores in 2 years and freshmen in 2 years will be able to jump into the pathways and really start that career exploration. We've got a lot of work to do. As I mentioned, these pathways are not static. Plans this spring include to share the pathways with kids and get their impression. Are we on the right track in their minds? We've only thought about it as a teaching staff. We only know what we know. And I hate being cliche-ish, but we're teachers, we're educators, and we focus in that mindset. And so an opportunity for kids to look at it who have a different kind of viewpoint. Are we on the right track here? What do you think? And then same thing with businesses and community members that we shared with last January when we had that big meeting. What do you think? Because they're going to look at it from a different perspective. And then take all that input and then start trying to really hammer out what they should look like when kids are really ready to get into them, which will basically be just 2 years from now, really, or a year from now, really exploring, 2 years from now, kids really into them. So that's kind of where things, we see them at this point in time. More and more certification classes, as a matter of fact, I was mentioning this to Douglas and I haven't given it to him yet. I've got a teacher who came up to me just over a week ago after seeing the state certification list and say, hey, I used to do that before I got into teaching. She was talking about iOS app development, for
what I just need to help with.
Exactly. And she said, I used to do that. And I can do Apple and I can do Google. And so she's really interested in doing that. So we're going to bring some of that to you. We've already got kids earning certificates this year, looking to expand internships, things like that. One of the things that is also going to come to you, it'll come to you before next August, but next August, we're probably in September, sometime in the early fall, asking you to help us make some finalization of is going to be graduation requirements. But we need to begin that process this spring, and we will do that at the building level and then begin sharing data with Douglas, sharing information with you guys, and then hopefully, like I said, in August, September of next year, we're finalizing new graduation requirements for our kids that focus on what we're doing with HTI to give our kids the best opportunities for success after high school. One of the elements to that too is our schedule, and I think I talked to you about the tests. Those are finished now. Our goal with this is to find a static schedule. And when I say static, every Monday is the same day. Every Tuesday is the same day. Right now we rotate red, white, red, white, red, white. One week you can have 3 and 2, the next week you can have 2 and 3. With a static schedule, we will have the same number every week, barring something in the calendar or a snow day or something like that. Just helps with consistency. As we're looking to expand some of our dual credit options, concurrent options, we may not have staff in the building, so we may have to hire somebody to come in and teach part-time. It just really helps if they can say, I know I need to be at Elizabeth High School every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and they know what times they need to be here. That'll help us. It'll also help kids with internships and things like that. If they're taking dual credit classes off campus, it will assist with that as well. So we finished the second test a week ago Friday. All last week, we began collecting data. We put out 2 surveys, one to students and parents, and then another survey to staff. Ms. Runyon, who runs the scheduling committee, has all that data, and we'll be meeting with that schedule committee to share it with them. Really impressed with the responses we received. We had 45 staff members, and we have 45 teachers, so that made me happy, that responded. And then we received 460 student and parent responses.
Wow, that's great.
You know, there's a lot of data in there that can be very easily chunked, and then there are a lot of comments, which we wanted, because, you know, do you like Schedule A or Schedule B? Doesn't tell us more than that they like one. It doesn't tell us why. And so we asked for comments, and we got a lot of really good comments, and Kimberly and the schedule committee will be looking at that. Come back to make a recommendation for which of the 2 test schedules, if any. I think, just based on what I saw, I think there is a desire for change. I couldn't tell you which one right now it's going to be, or it would be, and will it be exactly the same as the ones that we did. So will we have 2 stack days, 3 stack days, 1 stack day? If so, you know, what days of the week will they be, those kinds of things. So, not sure, but we got a lot of good responses, and so next fall we will have a new schedule. I just can't tell you right now what it exactly will look like, but you'll know probably within the next month or so. So that's kind of where
Thank
we
you.
Are.
Thanks for doing all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Seeking the input like that really makes a difference.
Well, you know,
this makes it clearer for me. Last time you were here, so
give Kristen kudos
Kristen,
on that.
Thank you.
That's Kristen. She put that together. I'm not. I can't. This is not me.
Yeah. Oh, come on.
This is me. Pen and paper. That's me.
Hey, Kristen. As a selfish man who has a kid that will be. Going through this, would it be possible to color code and have that color code flow through and follow the class through the next year? Because when I originally looked at this, I saw sophomores class of 2024, and I immediately went down to the yellow line down below to see what's coming up for her in the following year. But then I was like, oh, that's class of 2025. Does that make sense?
It does, yep.
You don't have to, but it would make it, if we're going to broadly distribute something like this, might make it easier to follow.
No, I see what you're saying, yeah.
Sorry, Kristen, I didn't mean to make more work for you.
No, you're good. That's an easy fix.
So, any questions, anything I can answer at this time? I'm sure you'll be getting periodic updates from me or other members of the committees on where we are with things, so.
You all received a list of the conditionally approved courses.
Yes.
So that's what they'll put in they call it the course list.
Okay.
Which is what is given to students, and it's a brief description of each of the classes. They then fill out what classes they would like. Some alternatives. Then there's this, like, I don't think it's Rubik's Cube is the easiest way to do it, but it's almost cliche to talk about that because it's
a puzzle.
It is a dynamic puzzle of who can teach what, how many classrooms, teachers do you have, what's what are the graduation requirements, what are the interests that students have, balancing out class sizes, and some of it's automated, but it's, you know, even to automate it, you have to set up the right parameters to do priorities. You know, this takes priority over that. And so there's a lot of churning that goes on. And then they look at the schedule. And one of the things that Brett and I talked about in terms of adding new classes is you want to be careful not to add so many new class offerings so that you end up with a lot of classes that are, you know, 8 kids, 10 kids have expressed interest, and a lot of kids aren't getting the classes that they preferred because you now have to go to everybody's second. And so it's my understanding that the ones that were conditionally approved are the ones that are going to be in the list, and then we'll see what the interest is.
Right.
Because there may be things that are, we don't know what the trade-off might be between, oh, there's this new class, but does it take away from an existing class in terms of student interest? So that's one of the things we'll just have to assess. You know, maybe there's an alternate, I can't remember the list, but I'll just use an example, an alternate English class. And so maybe an existing English lit class doesn't get as much interest, but the professional communications class does. But then what they'll do is the classes that they plan to offer for final approval, they would develop the fuller syllabus with more information about what curriculum materials would be used only once they know they're going to provide it, come back for final approval versus doing it, because it's a lot of work to really lay out all the pieces to a class if you don't know that it's going to be not just offered, but that students are going to be interested. So if that's okay with you all in terms of your approval process, it would be after they've heard back, they've seen student interest, they've done all the schedule balancing, and they would say, okay, yep, we want to offer that. They come back. And it doesn't mean that you just have to give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. If you had questions or you wanted to see different kinds of information, or, you know, you certainly have whatever discussion you want about that final idea of what that course would be, but it would come back for that fuller discussion after we know the kids are interested in it. And if you just go back to the email and the memo that I sent you could see the list of things that were conditional. And part of the condition was that there's student interest in it.
The 17 new classes that are on that list, I mean, odds are not all of them are going to probably make just by, you know, student interest and numbers. You know, we do have to balance. And Carl Zander, who puts our schedule together, does a wonderful job, but at the end of the day, we still have to make choices on, unfortunately, what can we teach, what makes the most sense to teach. And then, so some of what may be proposed may come back to you a year from now, or a year from now, or if kids choose it, then we come back and say, can we have this one for final approval? So again, when I said this is not finished. It never will be. There will always be, we're coming to you for your thoughts and your guidance on some things because it's going to be ever changing.
And I know one of the questions that I think, Kim, you had the last meeting was just about some of the trades and where, you know, where that was. Because it really wasn't a lot in either the pathways or in the new courses. And I'll just say in a sentence that some of those things are resource intensive, whether it's facilities or equipment. And so it was harder to fully develop those. Mm-hmm. But if you want to say anything more about, it's not that they're not being attended to, it's just for a culinary program. How do we transform our current foods program into a more, say, sophisticated, professionally oriented? There's some steps that are involved. It's not quite as easy to just a teacher that is fully capable of doing iOS apps that we can add. I mean, that wasn't on the list. Is there more that
you... Well, there are a lot of things that, you know, that's part of why we're taking it to kids, because, again, they've got ideas that, as teachers, we're thinking, I can teach this, I can teach this, I can teach this. And kids are going to be looking at things not necessarily that we can teach, but that they want. And that will help us get better ideas. For example, you know, if we... welding. I know there's a real interest in welding. For our kids, well, that's going to take a facility, that's going to take resources, and that's going to take staff that I don't currently have. And so, for us to, you know, we get that kind of idea, then that's, again, part of the conversations we're coming back to you. What can we do for resources, you know, obviously going to Ron. If we really want to offer this, what can it look like for us? You know, the same thing with a CNA class we're looking at trying to get in place. You know, we need to be able to staff it. We got to have a facility. We got to have equipment. And while some of that is already budgeted through HTI, I can have a modular unit with everything we need sitting outside, you know, on the north side of the high school. But if I don't have somebody who's licensed or certified to teach it, it's not doing us any good. And so there are a lot of those kind of elements that we're going to have to just work through. It's going to be a process. And I, as I talk to my staff, I was like, this is next year. Where are we at 3 years from now, 5 years from now? Again, ever-changing,
yep.
Becoming more and more adept at meeting the needs of our kids.
Any questions, Kim? Anybody else?
No.
Good. Okay.
Impressed.
Thank you.
All right, thank you so much for updating
and for your work on it.
Well, I've got a great staff. Please know they have done the vast majority of the work on this. I just kind of...
We do. We appreciate it. We appreciate you coming in and reporting on what they're doing.
Somebody has to lead it.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
yeah.
I'm... Yeah. I don't want to choke you up.
All right. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, moving on, technology update with
Maureen. A couple of things to update you guys on. I'm back on my notes. one is that I forgot that it was MAP season, testing season. And that's a good thing that I forgot, because that means everything went smoothly. In years past, this would be kind of a... one of those things that as a staff would have to prep for, make sure that we were there for, and a lot of this and why it's gone so smoothly has a couple of things. One is that our teachers are much more used to administering the MAP tests, and they're more comfortable with the tools, the software tools that's out there. And the other piece is the fact that everybody, all the kids generally, except for K-3, have a Chromebook that's assigned to them that they use, and so it's very easy. There's a just, you know how it works on the Chromebook. Before you log in, there's a little icon on the left. You click on that. There's one specifically for MAP testing. It's called NWEA. That's the company that does the test. They click on that, and then it right away puts their Chromebook into a secure testing environment. That was something before we had the tools. We would have to do kind of on a manual basis, etc. Now it's just a couple clicks away for our students.
That's really cool.
And so, and sometimes too, we would get calls because there was something wrong with either our network or on the MAP side of things, on their network. And so, MAP has come and gone, and we've talked about it. So, and that's a good thing. And so, what we're gearing up for also now is our CMAS test. Obviously, there's still some question about what's going to happen in that regard, but we're still planning to move forward. And so that one will be a little bit different for us, because now, especially at the high school, because every kid has their own assigned Chromebook, we're limited in the amount of Chromebooks that we have. There's some discussion about what we do with our 100% online students, and how are we going to handle those testing, that testing. For the middle school and for the two elementary schools, it shouldn't be much of an issue, because, again, we're getting to that point where there's a part of computers in every classroom now, or every student has a Chromebook. And so it's just kind of working out some of the details on how to administer tests when students have their own Chromebooks. So, speaking of Chromebooks, we're in the midst of this distributing. In our last update, we just received the equipment. And so at this point, a lot of it has been dispersed to Singing Hills. And so we should be finishing that up this week. At the end of this week, we'll be then giving the ones, sending over the ones that were bought for Winter Creek. And so I'd say by the end of midweek next week or next, the end of next week, our entire district will be one-to-one. So every classroom, K through five, has a cart that, generally speaking, has a kid assigned to a Chromebook. The middle school, we have enough, as it was in the beginning of the school year, they're not take-home one-to-one program, but they come in the morning, they pick up their Chromebook, it stays with them the whole day, they drop it back off into the carts at the end of the day. And at the high school, obviously, it's a take-home program, so they have their own Chromebooks. One of the things, I had my tech meeting today, one of the interesting things that's come up at the high school is that there seems to be a serial number of kids that are not bringing their Chromebooks into the school on a daily basis. And so they go to the library. We have some of our Chromebooks there, our older Chromebooks that we use for checkout for this purpose. And so they're trying to figure out how to curb that. What can we do next year? What can we include in the Chromebook agreement that parent signs and the kid signs to help curb that? But besides that, that's been pretty okay, I guess, too. I expected more kind of trouble from that. But even with our repairs, I mean, it's up, you know, there's been an uptick in our repair costs, et cetera, but not as much as I thought I'd see. One of the things that we talked about possibly before was having some sort of insurance option for these Chromebooks, but I wanted to see what it looked like in our first year, to see what that looked like, and discuss later on in the summer whether or not we think that that's necessary and how can we accomplish that. And then the last thing regarding Chromebooks that's going to be a big change for us too is whether or not we want to collect for the high school, collect them back this summer. And so during our tech committee meeting, at least for the three teachers that are part of my tech committee, they felt like it was important to have them return the Chromebooks every summer as part of the accountability process. And so I haven't had a chance to talk to Brett yet to see what his opinion is. Obviously, that creates a lot more work for us. If you remember, our program was that we would basically have a Chromebook assigned to every student, whatever grade level, and that becomes their Chromebook until they graduate. When they graduate, they turn it back in. Then we can either repurpose that Chromebook, or if it's too old, you know, it goes into surplus. And so technically speaking, a student comes in ninth grade and is handed a Chromebook. That's their Chromebook, the same exact Chromebook from ninth to 12th grade. So technically, there isn't a reason for them to return their Chromebooks, because we're not taking them back and redistributing them a different way. We would just give them back the same Chromebook anyway. So we're still kind of figuring that out, and so that's going to be a big piece of what we're going to do this summer and how we can arrange that. And so we're talking, 600 and whatever, 30-something, whatever their current enrollment is right now.
Is there just more of a risk, though, if we don't get them back, that they... a higher risk of them getting damaged or something happening to them over the summer?
The
kids moving away?
Anecdotally, when I talk to my colleagues in other districts that have one-on-one programs, at least, again, anecdotally, the ones who do just have the kids, it basically stays with the kid the entire time until they leave the district, they haven't had much.
Okay.
Yeah. But obviously, right, the last thing we want is to hand the Chromebook up in a ninth grade, and then when they turn it in 12th grade, it's like one half of a Chromebook.
Yeah.
After turning in. So.
Well, they have to use it for the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, so you know, it's not.
Right. One of the other items, too, that I asked is, well, what about usage in the summer? At least our three teachers in the tech committee felt like that wasn't going to be an issue, meaning like that they didn't have access to a device in the summer. Most of the summer work usually is for AP classes, and their feeling was that, well, we've been able to assign AP coursework in the summer without them having Chromebooks, so they should be able to continue to do that. Let's see, and then the last thing, just to give you guys a heads up on, is upgrading our network. you know, having all these devices onto our network, there are some things still that we have to do to ensure that we can support that. And we have the infrastructure in place to support that. There isn't an issue currently. But what will be an issue in the future is one of the connections that comes from one of our network nodes, so to speak. So as you know, or if you don't know, even if it's Wi-Fi, there's still a physical cable that goes in the ground somewhere. So our provider, our internet service provider, is Zayo, and so their fiber that runs all along 86, comes up County Road 13, and then goes into this building that we call our bunker. It used to be owned by one of the cell companies that had a building there. They built it into us. And so it goes in there, and then from there is wiring conduit that goes from there to transportation, and from transportation to EMS. And then from there, it just kind of goes everywhere else. And so the connection between, the conduit between transportation and EMS, a few years ago, we tried to see if we could pull more fiber cable through there. And we got stuck, which generally means that there's probably dirt in the conduit. And so that means that at some point that fiber that's currently there that services our entire network is going to fail. And so we're working on, in the next few weeks, providing another avenue by which our network travels from that bunker to EMS. We're going to do a wireless solution. So we're going to mount something on the side of the bunker, mount something at EMS, and then that will be our connection that will last us for years to come in terms of throughput, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's something that we knew was going to happen at some point. I decided to go ahead since I still had some money in my budget this year to use the money that we have now and not wait. And so that we'll make sure that we're ensuring a good, reliable network for all of our internet needs, especially for us doing remote learning, et cetera. I didn't want this to be caught in a situation where we're not being able to provide that for our students. So.
Marty, that bunker to EMS wireless connection, is that in a secure, set up in a secure manner to where it can't be tampered with? Or?
Yeah, so there's going to be a pole that's going to be mounted, I don't know, X amount of feet high.
Awesome,
feet high.
Okay.
And then the other side will be on the roof of EMS, where we have some of the other. So like, for example, our connection to Singing Hills is also on the roof. I don't know if you knew this, but there's a radio tower off of County Road 158, yeah. And that's our relay, so there's a microwave dish there that points to a dish that's on top of EMS. And on the other side is a dish that points to Singing Hills, and that's how we get to it. But yes, it's
perfect.
It's going to be, I mean, you know, as secure as any roof could be, I guess, is the answer.
I've heard some people use Rise broadband, and I've heard of vandals going around and messing around with the people's dishes that are reachable, so it brought to mind, oh gosh,
awesome.
That would not be good to take
we'll,
down the
we'll
whole
dish. We'll with some nice
there you go. Same stuff you use to keep the squirrels off your bird feeder.
Yeah.
And connect it to a YouTube video that's live.
There you go.
Or those bird feeders that spin.
Oh, that would be even better.
Throw the squirrel.
Yeah.
Or just electrify it.
Yeah. That's all I had. Any other questions?
That's good.
Thank you.
Yeah, no. Thank
great
you, Marty.
Job.
Appreciate it.
Congrats on not knowing map testing was taking place.
Yeah.
That's great. That means you're doing a fantastic job.
Next up, Chief Financial Officer, Ron.
All right, checks over $5,000 in addition to the typical utility costs and food purchases and things like that, fuel purchases. There's also some payments for SPED contractual services, some athletic equipment, tech hardware, the SRO, and some a repair of some equipment for food service. Any questions there? Moving on to financial statements. Since these financial statements are for the month of December, they do not reflect the budget that was just approved a couple of meetings, or last meeting a couple of weeks ago. The new budget numbers will be reflected in the financial statements that I bring forth in March. This report reflects, like I said, reflects activity through the end of December, or 50% of the way through the fiscal year. General fund revenues are at 33% collected as a percentage of the budget, and expenditures and transfers stand at 49.5% spent. While there are some cost centers over the 50% benchmark, the total general fund is, as I said, was under the 50% mark. I do want to point out a couple of cost centers that are over the 50% mark. It's quite significantly on the third page of the financials, if you want to take a look at it. If not, I can just go ahead and explain it. Under central services, this is where the coronavirus relief funds were budgeted. And we wanted to make it as easy as possible for everybody to be able to make sure that you don't have to create a new account for every single building. We only created two accounts, supplies and purchase services for the district. And a couple of salaries are also a part of it. But we put it under central services, and the two budgets are over $600,000, while the total central services budget's only a little over $900,000. So you got two-thirds of the budget that's completely spent. So it's going to be over budget, right? Or not over budget, but it's going to be over the benchmark for right now. And the other one is Frontier High School. We're not going to have Frontier High School in the budget at the next round we do budgeting. And simply because, well, the buildings, we're keeping it warm so we don't burst the pipes, and we're keeping the grass green so we don't kill it, and then it doesn't make it as attractive to sell. But what's included in there for right now are salaries that were paid back in July and August. So there's 2 months of salaries for the staff that was there previously. So that's why I don't have the budget that reflects those salaries there, but we need to show those salaries somewhere. And so this is on the financials are on the cash basis. And so that's why it's way over budget as it looks right now, but it's a small budget and it's not very much, but that explains those two. As for the rest of the funds, they're about where we expected this time of year under these circumstances, so it's obviously a little bit different because of people activity where there's hardly any fees being collected, little to no gate revenue being collected, and things like that. So, that's it for the financial statements, and there's one other item if there are no questions for the financials. About this time last year, I had mentioned to you that we were working on revising the facility use policy. Well, then the year kind of fell apart. There are other things we needed to focus on. And so I just wanted to let you know I want to bring back some revisions to the current facility use policy, including increasing the charges that we have for the buildings. So during my time here, I think we modified the facility use policy probably a good 12, 13 years ago. That was the last time we increased any of the costs to use our facilities, and obviously it's salaries have gone up, the cost of just keeping it clean, the custodial costs alone are not keeping up. It's policy, even though no outside groups are using it. When we do start having outside groups use our facilities, we need to make sure we're not subsidizing these groups. We're at least breaking even on this. So, I don't know exactly when I'm going to bring it back. I don't know if it'll be March or April, but just want to give you a heads up that it's going to be brought back to you at some point. All right. Any questions? Okay.
No.
It's good.
Okay. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Ron.
Move on to superintendent report.
Okay. Let's see. A couple of things. One of this. a lot of people that have gone above and beyond in response to the pandemic. We're maybe almost 11 months into this thing. And there's a person that I'd like to highlight and recognize, and then there's a group that I'd like to highlight. The person is Lori Clark, our nurse. And we probably recognized her informally before, and this is still an informal recognition, but I've begun to think of her as our secret weapon. Lori is a nurse, not just in training, but she worked for Children's for a number of years. And nurses are known for, typically, I reminded her, there's some portrayals in popular culture of not so nice nurses, but of having a great bedside manner. And so even though a school nurse doesn't need to have bedside manner, she has been able to have a great relationship with our staff and our parents who have questions. And we continue to put her, put her name and number in our communications. If you have questions, call the district nurse, call Lori. You know, it's not like there's any barriers there. And our staff and our parents are calling her, like almost every day, including plenty over the weekend. She said she got quite a few calls over the weekend, this weekend. And she listens to their issues, she answers their questions, and she just does it wonderfully. I've been in her office, I'll walk in to meet with her, she's on a call, and I can hear. Or we're meeting, she gets a call, she says, I need to take this. I say, fine, wait for a few minutes. So I personally heard, and I just want to give a little example. There was a mother who was calling about, I think, a couple of kids and what they do, because the father had some symptoms and was awaiting a test. Classic situation. You know, send the kids to school or not? Well, the answer is if you're waiting for a test at home, you don't send the kids to school. And she was very clear. This is what you need to do now. And then another one of the mother's questions was, and what if it's positive? Lori said, no, don't worry. Just do this now, and when you know the result, give me a call. And then we'll go over what you need to do next. It was very clear, very simple. And it worked for the parent. And she's had hundreds of these calls. And I believe that part of our ability to be safely in person is because of the phenomenal job that she's doing. Mm-hmm. And that personal, common sense dialogue that she's able to have with our families and with our staff to help them. I even think Kristen's kids were sick last week, and they've been sick for a while, and Kristen was a little frustrated. She wanted to be at work, and so she asked me, she said, you know, in her very, like, marketing, sales and marketing voice, you know, can I come into the office? And I said, give Lori a call. I didn't know what Lori was going to say, but I just knew Lori is the one to answer that question, that I'm not the one to answer that question. And then she provided the answer. And I believe that Kristen, like so many other people, trusted and accepted, because it's disruptive. Most of the time, the advice that she's giving is disruptive to the families, because it's not like, oh, no problem, no issue, you know, just send your healthy kids to school while your spouse waits for a test. No, it's, you have to be cautious, or is this fever, we think it's something else. All of that is disruptive to families, yet they've, which leads me to the second group I want to recognize, which is our parents. Because we can take credit for many things, but we can't take credit for the individual decisions that families are making every day. Not every family every day, but every day there are families making decisions about what to do. And they have cooperated and partnered with us to a degree that has allowed us to stay safely in person. Not just to stay in person, but safely in person. And I, I'm aware of other school districts and the number of people that come into the district with the virus, into their schools, that then precipitate, they quarantine their students. We don't quarantine, we just shift them to remote. Every other day. And in our schools, we've had one situation at the high school since January 5th, and one situation at an elementary. But at our high school, we've been in session 5 weeks, I think is the number, and we had one case where we had to exclude some students from in-person learning because of exposure in the school. And that's just due to, sorry, it's okay.
That's okay.
Okay. Because of our kids as well, but especially our parents. And so I know that I've mentioned that before, but it's not like there's one thing that's happening that's keeping us safely in person. It's absolutely, without Lori, I don't know what we would do. If it weren't for our parents, I don't know what we would do. If it weren't for really good leadership in our schools that are problem solving and doing common sense things, not, more is better, but what matters is essential, and what's trivial, let's not worry about that. Our teachers, who I think have come to distinguish better now than August and maybe even November, real risks versus perceived risks. And for a while there wasn't a lot of clarity in, for many of us, what's the real risk and what's not.
Well, that's because of what you and Lori and the teachers and the staff and the parents are doing, that we're not one of those districts who is talking about going, staying online.
Angry parents coming in like Loudoun County, Virginia.
Well, some of our neighbors have some very angry parents right now.
Yeah.
We haven't had to adjust our GPAs and eliminate Fs in order to allow kids to pass and maintain their level of good grades.
So our teachers have really...
So thank you for recognizing all of these people.
Though, absolutely.
Absolutely you.
It goes without saying. You're at the top of all of it.
Thank you. Those of you that have been in the schools, Kim and Paul, you've seen some of the classrooms. And when you see the classrooms, you can sympathize with some of the concerns that the teachers have.
Oh, sure.
Right? You read the newspaper, you look at the media, you do your own research, and you know that there's the real possibility of the spread of the virus. And you see a classroom full of 25 kids or more, and they're not 6 feet apart. They're less than 6 feet apart, because we couldn't have everybody there and be 6 feet apart. But the agencies who produce the guidelines and who understand the health aspects behind this, 3 feet distance achieves most of what 6 feet does. But we're the ones who are putting them less than 6 feet. And there's been no evidence, continues to be no evidence, of a virus spread, even though people have come in with the virus.
Right.
And the teachers dealing with that and being comfortable with the personal risk for them, for their family members, is not to be taken lightly. So it really, the main point was to highlight the parents, but that's to say it's not just them. The last thing that I'd like to comment on relates to this lack of spread of the virus when people have come in. And this is something that goes to Ron and his team, Lloyd, and the head custodians, and the work that they did this summer, the work that they continue to do with our HVAC, our heating and cooling and air ventilation system. And I shared with them at the in the summer and before the school year started, a number of resources about aerosol spread of the virus and the importance of outside air, monitoring air, quality, and that sort of thing. And they took that to heart, and I think very efficiently invested in making sure that all of our systems were working properly, which some of you may recall the brains that we bought. Were you here for that? That wasn't, that helped, but it also revealed issues with the HVAC system. And we do three or four things that really make a difference. And there, it's becoming clearer now. It's more like I can kind of tell trends by the junk spam mail that I get. I just cleaned it out because we our vaccination information might go to spam, so I went to my spam, and it only stores it for 30 days. Well, there were 500 messages in there, not too bad, but 500. I went through them, and the number of things for air filtration, air quality, et cetera, you know, 3 months ago, it was all about disinfecting and cleaning.
Yep.
Okay, now it's all about air quality. Well, we've been doing air quality since August, and it involves more outside air, so about 25% more outside air brought in through all of our units. MERV filters, we didn't on day one have all the units with MERV 13, but they, as soon as they could, and for the majority of the first semester, we did have the MERV 13, which is what the recommendation was for filtering out particles that the virus would be a part of, because the virus is smaller, but it always is transported by something. And then monitoring of the CO2 levels in different areas in our buildings, which we've been doing since practically day one. I don't know exactly day one. And so all the schools, all first semester, it would take a CO2 monitor. We had one for each school, two for the high school. And they had guidelines for CO2 levels that were indicators of the amount of fresh air that was coming into the space, which is really the goal while people are in the building, to have more fresh air come in. Because if by chance there's someone with the virus in the building, in a classroom, you want fresh air that reduces the concentration of the virus in that air. The virus is not so infectious that I breathe on you, now you're sick. But if you're in a closed room with poor circulation for a longer period of time, just like a bunch of guys playing cards in the basement smoking cigars, after a while, that smoke builds up. And you kind of, let's go take a break, stand outside, get some fresh air. But in our schools, when the kids take their walks, the classroom is now, it's circulating fresh air. And so that CO2 monitoring allowed the staff to go in and make some adjustments where they saw higher than our norm. I talked with Lloyd today, and he's continuing to do research and webinars and learn about this. We had heard that 700 to 800 parts per million was kind of the ideal target. That above that, you could go up to 1100, but that's like the best. So, what he learned, and he's been monitored, and that's where it's been about. It's been right there, so it's been good. But what he learned was that it's relative to the CO2 levels that are already in the air, 700 or 800 parts per million above what you normally have. Well, they hadn't been doing that, so they started measuring the CO2 levels in the outside air only, which are like 300 to 400 parts per million. So we're like even more below,
right?
And that's one way to just see that we and demonstrate that we have really good air circulation in our classrooms and in our buildings. We run the units while they're occupied rather than just based on temperature. So we do it in here. This is a fan that's, if its temperature gets to the right temperature, the fan stops. But for whenever folks are meeting in here, we just turn the fan on. So whether the temperature's right, that's why you have it in your own personal fan or heater. And then we bought, I don't know, in the end, it could be maybe 200 of these HEPA air filters. We gave them to anybody that has wanted them for smaller spaces. And in some classrooms, because they're quieter, we might have four just like this space, in addition to what we're doing with the centralized system. So I know you know a lot of this, but just wanted to reiterate it and to get a little bit more detail on the CO2, because that's both what's helped us to not have the spread of the virus in schools, and what's going to help us going forward, especially as people get a little bit more complacent. They may send their kids to school with the virus more. Yeah, go ahead.
I also wanted to plug the custodial crew, Mary Peebler at the high school. I think I mentioned to a couple of you, I've started to be able to go back to games once in a while, which is so nice to get back to the high school. And between games, they kick everybody out of the gym. They sanitize all the benches where everybody's sitting, including the athletes. I mean, they kick the referees out, for Pete's sakes. And they go through every nook and cranny of that gym. I watched through the window to see what the heck was going on. And they're just... the amount of work that these folks are doing is phenomenal, just to keep us safe. So a big, I guess, semi-public thank you to them.
Yeah, the custodians in all the schools have been going above and beyond, and you're absolutely right. We have paid a lot of attention to the cleanliness of the facility, but we have not gone overboard with that.
Right.
What I mean to say is we haven't asked our teachers to clean their classrooms after every class. Some districts have done. We haven't put those kinds of responsibilities on non-custodial staff. But during, was it during Christmas break? The custodial staff worked hard. They did a lot of cleaning. I think they may have had some new equipment too.
Yes, they did.
So it was a little bit, you know, it's trying out the new stuff. But they, and I'll tell you, the school, the schools looked, and I said the school because I was thinking of the high school. This is the one that really stuck out. I mean, you could tell. Because they could even clean the entryways better during school because it was a cordless machine, and like all the ice melt that would come in, they could, while kids were in class, they could be out there cleaning.
Is that their new fancy vacuum?
That's their new
the
fancy
green
vacuum.
One.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that it's an amazing accomplishment. It's taken so many aspects to make it happen, and we don't take it for granted, and we still don't. That was the main thing that I wanted to discuss. I'm confident that we can finish the school year safely in person. We know how to shift kids to remote learning, to deal with the staffing issues. We have not had an issue with substitutes, in part we've had the supply, we paid them more. As more and more districts move to in-person, there will be a higher demand on substitutes, but I'm confident that we can deal with whatever comes our way. And so I just wanted to pass along that sense of kind of positive future, especially now we're going to have the vaccinations for those that want the vaccination. We have a number of staff that already received the invitations. I don't know whether they received them yesterday or today. And then staff are receiving the Binax Now rapid at-home test. I signed up in part just to see the process. It was very easy. The Amazon delivered it to my home yesterday, 6 packs. And I think that I'm going to try it. I see a lot, not much downside, and just it's what they call it's not in response to a symptom or an exposure. It's just more monitoring. So there's a 5-day cadence, and it's more for protection and monitoring and kind of early detection if you have the virus. Got 2 kids in college, another in high school. My wife's a teacher. All of us, and to keep the family, I do that, then I could be an indicator if there's any spread in the household, because what we found, everybody's found, is there's a lot of spread in the household once, and it's that closed environment and you're the shared indoor air. So that we don't know how many of our staff have opted in. If you didn't opt in, this time, when it comes around the next month, they can opt in. You don't have to. It'll be kind of on a monthly cadence in terms of opting in or not opting in. And the first 2 months are free from the state. They're not free. Somebody's paying for it. I think right now the federal government is paying for it. But after that second month,
Yeah,
right. That's why I wanted to hear it. But our employees don't need to pay, and the school district doesn't need to pay, and Juan doesn't need to worry about the cost for at least 2 months, which should get us through the window of vaccinations. We might have people that do both. We might have people that don't want the vaccination but want to do the testing. They do some that do neither. Nothing is required, but both of those things, the vaccinations as well as the rapid tests at home, we believe are going to help our staff feel better than they did, which was really pretty good to begin with about the situation. So, and that's good because this time of year, you know, it's demanding on board members because we bring more stuff to you. We're still doing this year, but we're planning for next year. It's the same thing for staff. And they, you know, the staff are tired. They were tired back in October because it's just a lot. So I think the risk is going to be like that long trip that you take and you get close, you know, the 19-hour trip and you're in the last couple hours that feel, each hour feels like 19 hours. And just keeping everybody kind of focused. We will get to the end of the school year, but I feel like we've worked so well together that we will be able to do this. And I'm hopeful that we can do some fun things either at the end of the year or in the summer for our students. And so we did, some of the school districts are beginning to explore what they do for credit recovery and summer work and tutoring and a lot of things. The only area where we're looking at that is the 100% online students. Some of them have not been doing well. And what we do, because they, as they reincorporate into in-person, and we're trying to assess right now what those that were in-person, not in-person, 100% online the first semester that have reincorporated into the classrooms, how far behind they might be, to understand some guidance, if not requirements, we might give to the 100% online that are for second semester, especially so that as the end of the school year approaches, they don't just like.
Do you foresee next school year contracting that same online?
That's, we need to answer that question, and we don't have an answer. Right now, my preference is no, for one reason primarily, and that is that we know that in-person learning is more effective. What I can say is for that student, is it more effective? But the question would be, what does Elizabeth School District offer, and do we need to provide, to be everything for everybody? And I think that it has the potential of distracting us from our core mission and our core delivery method by doing that. When there are multi-district online schools and there are, if a student really feels that they need to learn online, there's probably people that can do it better than us. And do we need to provide it? We did it this year because of the special circumstances of the pandemic, but as an ongoing offering, I'm not convinced that it's the best thing for a smaller school district to do. Larger districts are doing it because they have a lot of students that have said they prefer that. Some of them have their own capacity to assign teachers to teach it or to support it. We haven't done that. We haven't used that model. It's all been contracted out. So it doesn't seem, where's the value added for us to do it when it's all contracted out if the student can find something else that's maybe a better model than the model that we can provide contracted out? That's a long answer.
That's good.
Other questions? Other?
Is that it?
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Thank you for the updates. Okay, do we have any public comment? Okay, no public comment. So we'll move on to...
Did you...
Yeah, that's good. I forgot. It was under my paper.
Okay, one more thing.
One more thing. Just to say that today was the last day for comment from staff on the calendar. We really, I think we had one comment, but nothing to prompt and kind of change. So what we'll do, this is very similar to the existing calendar. There's no substantive change, right? Mm-hmm. So with the caveat that it recommends continuing with a no school during the week of Thanksgiving.
Right.
So that that worked beyond our imagination,
especially this year.
This year, but it, I think we think it'll work in a non-COVID year as well. So unless you have any feedback for us, we'll send this out to parents very soon. We'll give them about a week to provide us any comments, feedback on it. We'll respond to those, we'll share those, and summarize them for you. They're likely to be similar things that we've heard in the past. Why don't we start later in August, after Labor Day? Well, you know, there's a response to that. We have to have a certain number of days, so we have to then cut out the time at Thanksgiving, etc. If we start earlier in August, it gets hot, the elementary schools don't have cooling, etc. But we'll see what comments they have, whether it prompts anything really large, a rethinking of this. Otherwise, we would bring this to you at your next meeting for your approval.
Okay.
Okay?
Sounds good.
You good with us sending it out? Like,
yep.
Yep. Is that it?
I promise.
Just going to double check. You sure?
I have one question.
Oh, we're off.
That's not on you.
It says here the high school graduation is on a Sunday. Is that? Yeah.
So it won't be on a Sunday.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether that's... What
I know this year it's on the 22nd. And it says next year is on the 22nd.
That's why we share it with you guys. So what we will do before we send it out to parents is we will put to be determined, because it is to be determined. And the main piece of information that we don't have now is when state track is and when the other state baseball, because we work to not have graduation when the state championships are held, so that our graduates who are also in state athletic competitions don't have to choose between their graduation and a state competition. And so we just have to wait. Thank you.
Yeah, it's John.
Yeah. That's why we do this, because people notice things, and that's...
Yeah.
That's only because I know it's this year, it's the 22nd.
Yeah, no, whatever. Because you're sharp.
Okay. Is that it?
See, board members do read the packet. Right?
We do. Yeah. Isn't it amazing?
It's great.
Amazing.
Read everything. Okay, moving on to consent agenda. Can I get a motion to approve items 8.1 through 8.6?
Second.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Formfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Okay, there are no action items and there are no discussion items, so we will move to BOE planning. Next board meeting is Monday, February 22nd. Does everybody think they can be there?
Yep.
As far as I know, yes.
Okay. If you find out you can't, let everybody know as soon as possible, because that's probably when we will do another executive executive session for superintendent evaluation.
Yep.
Talking to you about it, right?
Yes.
So we need everybody there if we can.
In the last 3 years, that might be the earliest you have ever gotten.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
In the last 3 years, yeah.
In the last 3 years.
We've had CASB before, but that was before y'all were on the board.
Right. No, since in the last 3 years. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah. That's because somebody has dropped the ball.
No, you haven't. That's not what I was pointing out. Although last year was close to July. I gave it to
him.
Okay. Nobody was going anywhere anyway.
No.
That's true. We were all stuck inside anyway. Okay.
Right.
So.
I don't want any, black marks for talking too much because it was good news tonight.
No, it was really. No, you didn't get black marks. We're still ahead of schedule. So
it's not just about tonight.
No. We've got a whole year of board meetings.
Yeah, I think I remember a couple of superintendent updates that went way over. I marked them all down.
Sometimes people's memories are short.
Not those. Not on those.
There were other superintendents' reports that were briefer than normal.
Yeah, you have.
It was good.
They balance out.
One.
I think I can count those on two fingers.
Yeah, no, I remember.
As long as
I must have missed one. Richard.
As long as it's, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's hard to notice if you're going long because we don't have Richard there.
Yeah.
That's right.
If you're listening, Richard, yes, we're talking about you.
Yeah, right. Hello, Richard.
Yeah.
We miss you.
Okay, so.
I'm sure he's listening.
So moving on, can I get a motion to go into executive session under CRS 24-6-4024F, personnel matters, discussion of matters specific to particular employees, not general personnel employees, does not include discussion of board members or appointments to the board, and it is to do the superintendent evaluation.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Banger?
Yes.
Director Cronfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Carter?
Aye.
Okay, and we will take a 5-minute recess.
Do you want to announce the time?
Head in.
Announce the time.
No, I'll do it when we go.
Okay.
We're going to take a 5-minute recess real quick, and then we will continue with the executive session.